People don't know how to communicate about what's going on with themselves, or they believe the interpretations of their mind. People say, I feel that, and then they fill in the blank with a bunch of words that are in an interpretation, and they believe that that's a feeling. And what that is a lack of training to understand the role of the mind, while also a lack of training to be present and connected with emotions and the sensory experience that comes along with them. And what I find in relationships is that most people don't have the training or the language. They haven't built the skills to be able to communicate about these things.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the Aligned Love Podcast. This is the place where I am going to help you find the one thing that you feel is missing, healthy love. I am your host, Lauren Zoller, and in this podcast, I will share with you how to attract love, live in alignment, and elevate your deepest relationships. So buckle up, get present, tune into your body, and open up to the possibility that you truly do get to have it all. Let's dive in. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to the Align Love Podcast. I have a very exciting interview for you today. One of my dear friends, Will Reason, is on the show. Will is an expert in helping high-level industry leaders transform their life and career through deep, powerful inner work. His clients are some of the world's top coaches and massive names in internet marketing. He has worked with Emmy Award winners, TED speakers, medical directors, global philanthropists, artists, teachers, and Fortune 500 developers. And over the past 18 years, Will has immersed himself in studying human development through the lens of culture, psychology, biology, physiology, somatics, mysticism, myth, and behavioral change. He is trained in many models, including somatic experiencing, core energy leadership coaching, karmic astrology, Amazonian shamanism, and much more. He is a wealth of knowledge, and Will integrates a multitude of therapeutic models into his work with clients and when teaching his students. Will is one of my mentors. I am really excited to share his knowledge with you. So without further ado, let's jump in and chat with Will.
So much later in life, I knew where to turn for these things. And while I was working at this bar, I would scour the internet for a variety of different things, like a variety of different kinds of obscure encyclopedias. And I just would just start at the beginning and I would read all the way through these things.
Some light reading of an encyclopedia.
You should see my library here at the house. It's
my gosh.
Yep. I could tell you that I did not read any fantasy or fiction books for a huge period of my life. It was all nonfiction. Wow. It was all some sort of historical accounts about things or technical information. I bought textbooks on anatomy and physiology and chemistry and a variety of other different things and just read through the textbooks for fun. So I'm like, where can I get education without having to go to school?
Right. Yeah.
I wanted the education, but I didn't want to have to go through the formal education process. I always dreamed of having a tutor, kind of like the Count of Monte Cristo did. So I'm developing, and then I discover the arts, and I start to work at this theater as a stagehand. And then a guy comes in with an opera company, and I did so well that he invited me to come up to a place in, I guess it's more closer to Northern Virginia, called Castleton, Virginia. And Castleton is a place where a conductor, a maestro named Lorne Mazel, lived. He owned 600 and some acres. And they would do what's called a summer stock, where people from all over the world would come to perform opera, grand opera. They had this massive tent, and it was more like a building, but it was an erected tent that was insulated. It was huge. And so I got my first taste of grand opera. And these are some of the best in the entire world that were coming and showing up there for the summer. And I spent 3 months there working constantly with them. And I went from just a basic stagehand to being the stage manager of the orchestra. And then from stage managing the orchestra, I was offered a job in Williamsburg, stage managing the orchestra there, or the symphony there. And I mean, it sounds really great when I say it out loud, but it wasn't a well-paid position.
Right. Never is.
No. But it was amazing as an experience to be in charge of those kinds of things. And I played violin when I was a young child for almost 7 years as a kid. So I understood orchestral dynamics. I understood, you know, the layout and settings and things like that. Yeah. I could kind of sort of read music. I don't remember it too well. It was more by ear that I played, but that allowed me to integrate into this world. And I started doing more work with opera companies. And I even did some work in Carnegie Hall, Boston Symphony Orchestra, a couple of other places. And I started phasing out of this working in restaurants kind of thing and started moving into the arts. And the nice thing was that I could make what I thought was pretty good money at the time, you know, $30 to $50 an hour. And which for many people is great money in the, you know, blue collar working world. Like, it wasn't too bad at the time, you know. So meanwhile, my mother has become a counselor in the background, and she's started working with people. And we now are beginning to have a shared language because I've been deep into psychological theory and whatnot. And she went to school and immersed herself in these theories in ways that I didn't. But we started to have a common thread, and healing took place between the two of us. And it was bit by bit over time. But eventually, she bought a duplex and I was able to live in the other half. And we started this reparative journey together where the hurt and the pain and the guilt and the shame she felt about what happened with me as a child and the anger that I, and the resentment I had towards her melted away. It softened and we rekindled our relationship. And the same thing happened with me and my father. My father and I are very close right now. My mother and I are very close and collaborating on our training together.
Amazing.
Yeah. It's just absolutely incredible. So
wild.
Yeah. So this leads towards her recognizing my skill with psychology. And I started learning about physiology. She went through the SE training before I did. And then back in 2014, she's like, you really need to go through this training. You really need to go through this training. And I audited one of the at-home modules with her. And I had this slight understanding of what was going on. Slight, because I did not have the full context. But I was like, oh my God, this makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Right? And so I was offered a trip to Peru in 2015, in the fall of 2015, after beginning a coach training. She's like, well, you got to go back to school. You got to go back to school and get your degree in psychology. You got to go back to school for counseling. You need that degree for this thing. And she's still an advocate for me to do this. I don't know. I may someday. We'll have to see.
I feel like, what are they going to teach you? Well, at this point,
that's what that friend of mine said. Yeah. He said the same thing. He's like, well, you already know things that are far ahead of. Of those teachings. I think what I might learn is foundational theory, things that might've been missed along the way, but not that I can't learn that by reading some books.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah. So she kept encouraging me, and then I realized that I could become a coach. And in 2012, I produced a music festival, and then she met some astrologers. She meets these astrologers, and they have a training in astrology. And so we both join. And that was my foray into learning about hypnotic regression and hypnosis, Milton Erickson's work. And I was like, I want to learn from you. It was a husband and a wife, and their names are Linda and Michael Brady. Linda passed, I think it was last year, but Michael's still around and he's still doing his thing. And I leaned in, and my mother helped me. She helped to pay for some of those things for a little while. And I immersed myself, and she, for my birthday one year, she paid for me to have, I know it was Christmas. She paid for me to have a weekend retreat with the two of them. So I went to their home in Florida and I spent 4 days with them. And during that 4 days, kind of like going through my life story and looking at the archetypes, and they're teaching me about astrology, and I'm watching them, and they're working on the phone. They don't do Zoom. They're just telephone calls with clients. And they've been doing this for 25, 30 years, something like that. And people paid them $150 an hour for their time. And I'm like, tell me how to do this. Yeah. It seemed like a lot of money to me at the time. And I've always been a kind of person that ignored some sort of social customs to not ask for things.
Right.
I figure the worst thing that can happen is somebody will say no. And so I said to Linda and Michael, I was like, how can I study with you? They're like, you are studying with us. You're learning this material. It's a 6 month or a 2 year apprenticeship program where you're learning. I said, no, I want to live with you. Could I live with you for a period of time and immerse myself in this and learn from you? Would you take me on as an apprentice? Like, how could we make this happen? I didn't let it go. Linda thought about it. They'd never done anything like this. She thinks about it and she comes back to me the next day. Initially, she said no. She comes back to me the next day and she said, if you could have one more person coming with you, I'd do it for this much money. I'll spend a month with you. We'll go up to our cabin in Vermont. And they had a cabin in Jay, Vermont. Jay, Vermont's about 5 miles from the Canadian border. So close that my phone thought I was in Canada most of the time. And I fought with my cell phone provider about the charges, the overage charges, like again and again. So she says yes, and I find the money. And one of the other people in the cohort that we're in says yes. And so we go to northern Vermont and stay in this tiny little cabin. It was a two-bedroom cabin with a loft. I hang up some sheets along the loft to give me privacy, and we stuck a mattress up there. And I immerse myself in learning. So I have these 45 days straight of every single day we're doing some sort of immersive learning about astrology, about psychology, about hypnosis, past life regression. And they went deep. I mean, we're talking like the symbolism of this particular kind of leaf or this particular kind of bug and how it relates to psychological components and spiritual components and our life trajectory and the integrating of all of these things with astrology and the symbols and the language of astrology and the myths around it. And we immersed ourselves. I got to practice on somebody because there was one other person there. They got to practice on me, dream interpretation. And by the time I came out of it, I was more trained in psychology and abstract thinking than I was in astrology, but I did learn astrology too. And something that Linda would say a lot was, Carl Jung was an astrologer. He simply took what doctors used as a means of understanding personality, and he translated it into a language that was neutral, it was free from any dogma or religious connotation. And that was the advent of psychological theory. Because you have types, like character personalities, right? Character structures and things like that. And I don't know how much truth is to that. I mean, I think that Carl Jung really did understand astrology.
Yeah.
But that gave me this window into Jungian thinking and processing. And so I started offering sessions. I didn't start at, you know, $50 an hour. I started at $120 an hour. That's what I started at. I didn't have a lot of people that said yes initially, but I was like, I'm not going to devalue myself. I'm going to start here. And that meant I had to figure out who to market to. And I discovered that it was much harder for me to do the kind of work that I wanted to do without some other kind of formal training to give me structure to it. And so some of the first clients I worked with were in my mother's therapy room, psychotherapy clients, complex cases, because she worked with a ton of complex trauma back then. And I got my feet wet, working, doing this kind of work in that context. And I found that I was really good at it.
I just
understood people. I don't know how, I don't know why, but it just made sense. I could listen to them talk. I could see things and hear things. I could watch their behavior. I could recognize things, and I knew how to help them. So she encouraged me to find a coach training, and I did. So that coach training, I went through that coach training, and then I was offered an opportunity to go to Peru. And I'd always wanted to go to Peru. I read the Celestine Prophecy, and I was like, I want to go to Peru. And more than that, I wanted to study with some of the shamans, the indigenous people that have this relationship with the ayahuasca plant, and a variety of others. And so that guy who my wife ended up leaving me for, I was married really young at like 23, and she left me for this guy who took the business. He shows back up in my life and wants to make amends. And I'm like, okay, this is a karmic closing of the loop. He offers to pay for everything for me to go to Peru. And I'm like, all right, I'll say yes to this. And that kickstarted this next phase of my life, the one that I'm in right now, where I immersed myself in self-discovery. I was interviewing people and asking them questions like, what does happiness mean to you, while we were traveling, really exploring the depths of myself. I went through this physical transformation where I was about almost 300 pounds and I lost over 100 pounds in about a 7-month period while I was traveling. Fasting, through emotional processing, through psychological processing, and through movement. Did some incredibly difficult hiking. And we were talking about some of the fasting that I did while I was there. You know, 14 days, just water and a variety of other, like removing toxins and stuff like that. And I had been reading Peter Levine's work. When I got back to the States, the relationship that I was in was no longer working. And I met Ariana, my ex. And she and I met in the context of ayahuasca. We started facilitating ayahuasca in a place that I can't talk about where it is, but in a place here in the States. And we were immersed for almost 2 months in this experience. And from there, we decided to partner. And she and I think and talk in very similar ways. Mm-hmm. It was like I met a version of me that was in a different body that could articulate things the way that I could articulate them. Mm-hmm. And I told her, I was like, you know, telling her about the vagus nerve, telling her about the nervous system states. And we're like, that's the science of shamanism. I'm like, yeah, it's the science of shamanism. So we decided to embark on that journey of the SE training together as a couple. She was living in New York for a while. I drove to see her every month in that 5.5-6 hour drive between Charlottesville, Virginia and New York City on a regular basis. And then eventually she moved to Virginia to live with me. And we immersed ourselves for the next 3 years. It's actually about 2.5 in the SE training while developing a coaching process of our own. And so for those of you listening, if you've ever been in a container where you're working with somebody or you're living with somebody that is in the same line of work as you, that's doing similar things where you have shared ideas, you might know that growth happens at an exponential rate when you're around a person like that. And for us, it was just like our careers just went from budding careers to just like exponential growth. She understood how to use social media in a way I didn't. So I started learning by watching what she was doing. And our company started growing. And then post SE, we realized the world of coaching and personal development is missing an understanding of trauma. And while I could help people change and transform beforehand, once I had the tools that I learned in SE, the nuance of what I could do, people just thought they're like, how do you know how to do this? It's like a wizard. Mm-hmm. You're like, it's like magic.
Yeah.
And we know, you know, I know, you know, having an SE session, it's like somehow something magically changed inside of me and I'm now different. Mm-hmm. How is this possible without using anything other than my awareness of myself?
Right.
Unbelievable. And so that's the abridged. I don't know how abridged that was. But we had like 45 minutes.
It was great. I mean, it was perfect. I loved it. Yeah.
Leaving out pieces along the way, but that opened me to a world of possibility. Yeah. I don't have to be a clinician to now enter certain training environments because I'm now trained to work on trauma. And I have respect from people who I would never have had respect from. And it's interesting, Lauren. While I was going through these trainings, I showed up in nice clothes. Mm-hmm. I wore a sport coat and a button up. And many times over, the women there thought I was an entitled prick. Mm. I'm this white man who just has everything.
Yeah.
They have no idea the story and the life that I've lived because all we see is that snapshot.
Yeah.
And because I can string thoughts together and I'm smart and I'm well-dressed and I look like I have money, we make the assumption that I have that white privilege life. Mm-hmm. When in reality, there are elements of my life that are absolutely privileged, but man, the pain and the suffering, like I drew myself out of that.
Right.
No one was coming to help.
Yeah.
I had to find my way.
You know? Yeah.
And then I chose a certain kind of clientele. I was like, listen, I want to work with the wealthy. Mm-hmm. I don't want to work with people who are in the shit. So, well, in the shit's the wrong way of saying that. It wasn't about what I didn't want. Let's just leave it at that. It was about what I did. I have felt compelled to do something to help the world since I was a child. I remember having these visions of being on a stage. I don't know the context, but just these visions of it. And I knew that the way that I could make the biggest impact was work with influential human beings. And so I set my sights on working with those kinds of people. And that meant that I progressively charged more and more and more for my services. And I poured my money into trainings and to skill building so that I could be the best that I possibly could be and have something that's incredibly unique in an industry that's often copycats and the same.
Yeah. Yeah. It's an amazing story. And it was great. I think it was nice and concise.
Thank you.
Are you a high-achieving woman who is tired of swiping left and right, hoping to find the love of your life? Are you ready to break free from toxic relationships and finally create a deep, lasting connection with someone who truly aligns with your heart and soul? Well, I want to introduce you to the Align Love Collective, a transformative 6-month coaching container designed to help you find your soulmate without sacrificing your career or wasting any more time on the dating apps. In the Align Love Collective, you'll embark on a journey of self-discovery and personal growth. Our team of expert coaches and therapists will guide you through a proven process to discover the root of what's keeping you from finding your soulmate, understand how to get your nervous system in alignment with what you desire, then watch it all unfold as you implement the roadmap that will lead you straight into the arms of the one you love. But that's not all. When you join the Align Love Collective, you become a part of a supportive community of like-minded individuals, all on their own journeys to finding the love that aligns with their deepest desires. You'll receive ongoing support through live coaching sessions and exclusive resources to help you every step of the way. Plus, you'll gain access to guest experts to ensure that you have the tools that you need for success. Don't settle for anything less than the love you deserve. Join the Align Love Collective and discover the path to a healthy, lasting love. If you want to learn more, visit my website at www.laurenzoller.com/soulmate, S-O-U-L-M-A-T-E, to learn more. The Align Love Collective, where love and alignment go hand in hand. Something that you said there at the end about having that version of you that people think is this white privileged male. I'm so glad that you told that whole story, because I feel like there are so many people that are listening that can resonate with that deeply, because you're right. It's like we profile everywhere we go. And especially, I know that this podcast is a lot about deepening relationships, whether you're dating, in a relationship, married, and how often do we look at someone and we don't know their story. I mean, the fact that you have gone through all of that is so incredible. So thank you so much for sharing that. And I have so many questions about the story that you told and everything that we've kind of gone through, but I'm curious because my story is very similar in that I was very educated. I kept pouring into different modalities and really understanding. I always led through the body. I was a dancer. I always understood that the body held so much wisdom. I just didn't understand it until I found Essie. It was like, once I found Essie, everything that I had thought was crazy about myself, it all made sense.
Yeah.
Right? There was context to it.
Yeah.
So I'm curious from you. I always talk about talk therapy can only get you so far. And there are so many people out there who have spent so much time and so much money and so much of their resources in traditional talk therapy and CBT, right? Mm-hmm. And the moment they find Essie, it's like, what was I doing this whole time? So I would love to know kind of your take on that entire kind of topic in and of itself, because you did all of this intellectual work. But in essence, you came back to the body. At the end of the story, you came back to the body. So I'm just kind of curious your thoughts on that topic.
Yeah, well, for me, I was stuck in my mind. When I started working with Linda and Michael would say, what are you feeling? And he gave me 5 options: mad, sad, glad, scared, or ashamed. Mm. And my response to him was, I think I feel, and then I'd fill in the blank. He'd say, well, where do you feel that? And I don't really know. And I would be feeling so much in my body. I'd be feeling fear, shame. I'd be buffering myself to prevent them from noticing or seeing my feelings. Because for the longest time, expressing emotion was not safe. I would be attacked. I'd be made fun of or cut down, even though I am a pretty emotional person. I think we all are. And so for me, it was the realization that I could not put into words what was happening in my body. And that realization turned into a realization that I'm actually was not even really inhabiting my body. Mm. I was not aware of it.
Yeah.
I was mostly thought. I was highly intellectual, but I was not physically present. And when I discovered SE, I discovered an entryway, a portal into feeling. And it was something that I could do with myself after I had been facilitated enough to do it with another. And that's never the same when we're doing it by ourselves, because we can't guide right. And direct and interrupt and all that stuff. But for me, this coming home to my body, being in my body, inhabiting myself, and having it be okay, safe enough for me to be in me. That was the thing where I recognized that most of the world is not present in themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a good reason for that for most of everybody.
Right.
And I just wanted to learn as much as I could about how I could support people in becoming connected to that. And I realized, because I've heard stories about, like, Ken Deitwald wrote a book called Body Mind.
Mm-hmm.
Really great book. He just tells his story about some of his experiences out in Esalen. He doesn't name who the teachers were that he was learning from. He doesn't give the names of the people who he learned from. But I read that book and I was like, that, I want that. I want to be able to see a body, watch it move, and know its story. I want to be able to watch myself, be with myself, and recognize the patterns that are present. And at this point, I'm convinced he was probably learning from Ida Rolf, Stanley Kelleman, or Moshe Feldenkrais. There's the three of those, like, well, I'll let that hang there for a moment. When I discovered that there was a field of study for immersing ourselves in understanding human nature, both the biological and the spiritual, psychological, emotional, psycho-spiritual, emotional, I guess we could say, but the biological component of it, the body, there was a field called somatics. I didn't even know it existed. It's so obscure. I had no idea, but when I discovered that there was a word that I could use to search for studies and teachers and practitioners, it was like the holy grail of understanding human nature just showed up right in front of me.
Right.
And I started digging and discovering these teachers. And the more I read by them, the more I realized that they really understood the fundamental nature of what it is to be alive. They were studying it and they had discovered ways to work with that natural life force to help our bodies to be more alive. And then the more I dug into that, the more I realized that the ancient Buddhist and Vedic teachings, the Hindu culture, understood this thousands of years ago. It was shrouded in religion, and I had rejected religion, so I hadn't been able to see it. But now when I come to it with fresh eyes, what I recognize is that these practices, they're practices about inhabiting ourselves. Trauma is that which fragments us and ties us to the past. The Buddhists talk about attachment. It's very similar to trauma. The thing that lingers, the thing that keeps us from being in the present moment. I can't be here because I'm holding on to the past. I'm not really holding on to it. That's an allegory. That's a figure of speech. The body just is doing what it most intelligently needs to do to process those experiences or to not process them, to keep them compartmentalized. But that does inhibit our ability to be present and to inhabit our bodies. And Essie was the portal. It opened it all up for me. I'm like,
It poses a question for me because it's, you know, I work a lot in the relationship realm. And it's interesting that the women that I work with, they start to find, I define it as a language, because it is. You're learning the language of your body. And most of us, the majority of us, were never taught to speak that. I mean, even with, as I guess, awakened as your mother was growing up, there still isn't that redirection back to feelings, back to emotions, back to sensation and what the body's feeling. And so I'm curious for you, if you have any advice here, because a lot of the women that I work with, they come into this knowing, and men too, much less as far as men are concerned, but these women and these men come in and they learn this language and their life starts to change. And one of the biggest questions I get, and one of the biggest, I would say, roadblocks, is that because this work is so new, and I would say, I mean, it's exploding now. People are really understanding somatics, but being able to speak that language with someone in a romantic relationship and have that understanding, it's difficult. It's difficult when you're dating. I mean, I can attest to it. Mm-hmm. I have not dated one man that knows the language of his body. It's very difficult. But having that shared language, it's few and far between. So I'm just curious, how do you navigate that, if you want to share personally, but also what do you notice about the world as a whole in speaking that language between dynamics within a romantic relationship?
I'll start on the whole, and then I'll talk about me personally, how I find my way through that. with Descartes, I think, therefore I am, there was a cultural shift into thought ruling things. And I don't think it was just Descartes. I think it was, you know, the Greeks and the Stoics, and they had a different understanding and articulation of these kinds of things, but it was very thought focused in many ways. And I think the Greeks had a much different way of doing this, but let's just say modern culture and leave that out of it for now. This focus on the mind takes us away from feeling in the same way. Right now, we're in this cultural movement where it's a hard overcorrection to focus on emotion and the validating of emotional experiences, where emotions dictate our decisions and we're rejecting the mind. Neither way is right. We need something that's integrative, and mental, emotional, physical sensations all occur simultaneously inside of our body. It's a biological process. There's no separation between all of them. And the way that I see this showing up in relationships is that people don't know how to communicate about what's going on with themselves, or they believe the interpretations of their mind. People say, I feel that, and then they fill in the blank with a bunch of words that are in an interpretation, and they believe that that's a feeling. And what that is a lack of training to understand the role of the mind, while also a lack of training to be present and connected with emotions and the sensory experience that comes along with them. And what I find in relationships is that most people don't have the training or the language. They haven't built the skills to be able to communicate about these things. And to your point, in relationship, there are very few people that I come into contact with that I can relate in that way with. And I think that is what happens when we're out there on the edge,
right?
Learning and exploring things that most people don't ever come into contact with. And it gets to be us. It's one of the things about being a leader. We have to go first, even though there are times, Lauren, I know you can relate to this, where it's like, why the fuck do I have to go first?
Yeah, all the time.
Where the fuck is the person that's going to go first for me?
Yeah.
Right? Like, I want somebody to go first for me. I want to turn into a puddle and have somebody go, I got you. I hear you.
Yeah.
I know what's going on with you. And most of the time, that's not going to be the case for those of us that are leaders. But that means that we learn patience, that we learn empathy. We learn to soften in those moments. And that's us leading. Mm-hmm. We learn to go first, even in the moments when sometimes we have to go first to get our need met. It's not all about us. We learn to be, I don't want to say selfless, because it's not selfless. It's we learn to get our needs met in different ways, I think.
Right. Yeah.
And sometimes that means that we are the teacher. We can do that in a way that's inviting, mm-hmm, rather than condescending. And I don't think that there's a real answer. I don't have a real answer for the problem right now, but we can see that there is an overcorrection. Hopefully we find the pendulum swings back towards the middle, and we find a middle ground, because there's a popularity of sorts with this work right at the moment.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and even hearing you say being the teacher and inviting it in, mm-hmm, without that sense of hostility, or even what I see often is when someone does have this language and they are in partnership, it almost becomes a weapon. Sometimes.
Yeah.
And they can weaponize the person that they're with, and then it just drives that wedge even further. And so, mm-hmm, I wanted to hear your take on that. That's a beautiful way of being able to look at it, is when you can soften into knowing this and becoming a teacher and inviting someone in. Again, you're choosing to lead with compassion within a partnership, which is just so, that's what it, mm-hmm, takes.
Yeah. Compassion and empathy, right? Yeah. It's like, empathy is really truly understanding our partner and knowing that our partner, where is their capacity? If they don't have the capacity to meet us in this thing, then we're in fact putting too much on them. It's discompassionate for us to request that they meet a need that they're incapable of meeting. And we're not actually seeing them in who they are. We're applying an expectation to them that's unreasonable for their skill level. Yeah. It'd be like me expecting a person who cannot drive a car to drive a car. Like, no, you need to figure this out. Don't fucking hit things. Don't wreck the car. What are you doing? Why are you fucking up? And that's horrible.
Yeah.
And we would not expect a dog to be able to write a paper, right? And that, because I'm using the analogy of a dog, it might sound pretty harsh in relationships dynamics, but it's the thing I'm pointing at, right? It's like applying an expectation a person doesn't have the skill. So instead, what we can do is work to help to cultivate the skill.
Mm-hmm.
We get to model it. Yeah. How do we learn best? By having somebody model the thing.
Right.
And I'm not always successful at this. I have my moments in relationship where I just get frustrated, or I can be condescending at times. Not because I want to be, just because sometimes it comes out that way. Mm-hmm. And I have to then demonstrate what it looks like to claim responsibility for my behavior and say, hey, that really wasn't very kind of me. And I recognize how that felt for you. And you know, I can do better, kind of thing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah. It's that awareness, the awareness of being the teacher, but also being willing to own when there's repair that needs to be needed and responsibility. It's a beautiful. Well, I could talk to you for hours. We probably need to come back and talk more about, we wanted to talk about psychedelics today. We didn't get to psychedelics. We wanted to talk about the difference between traditional therapy and what's happening right now in the SE world. And we didn't really get to talk about that too. So I'm going to have you back. I would love to have you back.
Yeah,
to have deeper conversation. I would love it. I would absolutely love it. And I know that my listeners are going to eat it all up too. For those who are listening, and I just wanted to share this with you, you were that first step for me, that first kind of toe dip into the SE world and really being, I was searching, right? I was searching. I had done so much talk therapy and oh my gosh, I had spent almost six figures in certifications and trying to figure out so much of my life. And when I came in to your trauma and somatics program with Ariana, my eyes opened and I was like, this is it. This is exactly what I needed. And then that led me down the SE rabbit hole. And then I ended up getting my SE certification and going through the program. And now it's my life and my world and really has changed so much. So I just wanted to thank you for being that catalyst for me. With saying all of that too, talk about trauma and somatics, because I know that it is changing so many lives in the coaching industry and people need to hear about it.
We describe it as a training that teaches to become trauma-informed as a practitioner, but it's so much more than that. It's an experience of transformation, of coming home to your body. It's the education that we'd never had, that we wanted coaches to have, about the nervous system, normalizing the human condition, we could say, what it is to be alive, what it is to be human. And having that context and that experience of our body as a practitioner, we recognize it in others. It's the thread that connects us all. And people mostly say when they go through the training, they mostly talk about their personal transformation. We provide skills and tools and techniques to use with clients to better understand trauma, to work with a person that has trauma without working on the trauma. There are lots of interesting distinctions. But beyond that, there's a personal transformation that occurs because of how we design the training. You know, what I say is Trauma and Somatics as a company, it's growing now. We're going through a phase of growth that I'll talk to you about. And this will be the first public discussion about this. But the company, we're a company that provides education and experiential learning in the field of trauma and somatics. And the training, our flagship training, really is an experiential learning process. And many of our students go on to take SE. We really believe in the training of Somatic Experiencing International. We really believe in the ethos of what is being provided by them. And you can't get it anywhere else in the world.
Yeah.
And we are a really good first step when somebody's interested in learning more about somatics and moving in that direction. And so one more thing I'll say to the listeners, if you're interested in joining us this year, the May cohort and the September cohort are the last opportunities that you will have to experience the training with me and with Ariana as facilitators, because we're growing as a company, which means that we're bringing in new facilitators. And that means that we'll be moving out of the role of facilitator in the company. And so I want to encourage the listener, if this is something that you're interested in, and if you've been thinking about it, come join us, whether that be in May or whether that be in September. You can find out more on traumaandsomatics.com. But really, honestly, this is near and dear to my heart. It's a process of transformation, and it's just dipping our toe in, like you said. It's just the beginning. Yeah. And next year, my mother and I are launching a really deep, in-depth training that goes through the arc of what it is to form as a human being and how to use that arc to stimulate transformation and change. We talk about advanced psychological theory, physiological theory. We talk about what we teach about the process of formation. It's called formative somatics. As a nod to Stanley Kellerman's work, he created something called formative psychology. And we don't believe that his wording with the name of his model was quite right, because it's so embodied what he teaches. Mm. And so formative somatics really ties it all together, because there's a process of formation that's happening all the time.
Yeah.
And there's a process of deconstruction that's occurring all the time as we're going through processes of change. And so we threaded all those things together in a training system and a model that helps people support transformation to occur. Now, I'm very, very excited about it. It's
exciting.
It's going to be super cool.
Well, you can go ahead and count on your first student to be me. So I would love to go through that training. But for anyone that's listening too, sign up for the May cohort, sign up for the September cohort. It will change your life. Even if you're in the space of not wanting to work with bodies long term. Yeah. I mean, the trauma and somatics training is just so beautiful to reconnect you back to yourself and get that language that we were talking about to understand how to feel, how to emote, how to notice your body in present time, which pulls us all the way back to our, you know, intention that you said at the beginning, to just know presence.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this one other thing. Most of the things that we could learn that maybe are absent in our life as it pertains to emotional regulation, psychological processing, like body regulation, things like that, these are all just skills that we haven't learned. Mm-hmm. Attachment theory teaches us about different patterns of relating, getting close, moving away. But ultimately, we as humans just need to learn the skills that we didn't learn before. And if we think about it like movement or exercise, it's identical. It's skill building that happens progressively over time. The training, we built it in such a way so that it progressively builds on top of itself. So we learn these skills. That emotional regulation is the same thing, same with relational dynamics. It's all just skills that we need to learn. Yeah. It's not hopeless. It's like there's an answer, and there are people that know the skills.
Yeah. So, so true. Well, we'll drop the link. I'll snag the link from you. We'll drop the link for people to register. We'll put it in the show notes below. Well, thank you. Thank you so much for coming and sharing your insight and your story, which was so beautiful. I had not heard all of it. And I know that other people are going to be touched by it as well. Really quickly, before we end for today, I have one last question for you. Okay. I ask everybody that's on the show, what does being in aligned relationship, what does that mean to you? And again, any relationship, not just romantic, but your relationship to self. What does it mean to be aligned in a relationship?
I think I'm going to tie it back to the thing I said at the beginning. Well, I think it maybe is a two-parter. For me, being aligned is being present with another, but it's also recognizing the resonances that are there and when they're absent. Because there's something to be said about resonances that exist in certain relational fields that are absent in others. Some partnerships just don't work because of the friction that's present. And being in an aligned relationship, that means that there are enough resonances that the friction doesn't cause destabilization, that the friction is possible because there are enough good moments and there's enough connection, there's enough empathy, there's enough safety. And when those things are absent, many of us stay hoping and trying to force it to work instead of letting go and making room for something that is more aligned.
So big. And that's exactly what I needed to hear today. So thank you for that gift.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for sharing your heart. And I will have you on again soon, because we've got so much more to talk about.
I love it.
Awesome. Thank you. That wraps up today's episode of the Aligned Love Podcast. One thing that would really help me and the other new potential listeners is for you to rate this show and leave a comment wherever you tune in and listen. Also, make sure to link up with me on Instagram at Lauren Zoller, and please share this podcast with anyone who you think may enjoy it. Until next episode, remember, every transformation begins with one moment of awareness, and I hope today has been yours. I'll see you next time.